Welcome to Not Work Myth and Storytelling. This is the show where ancestral wisdom meets the modern imagination and our timeless connection to the land itself. Season 7, Episode 12, All Ground is Sacred Ground, Story and Conversation with Mary Reynolds. I'm your host, Marisa Gowdy, and I'm so excited to welcome you back to the show and to welcome Mary Reynolds here for the very first time. Mary is a reformed landscape designer who launched her international career by winning a gold medal for garden design at the Chelsea Flower Show in London in 2002. That story is later told in the movie Dare to be Wild. Mary is trying to rewild the concept of landscape design in gardening so that they might become positive impact professions that put nature at the role of lead designer. She is a best-selling author, activist, speaker, writer, RTE guide columnist, and occasional television presenter. She is the founder of the global movement We Are the Ark, Acts of Restorative Kindness to the Earth. Her mission is to help us decolonize this planet, patch by patch, garden by garden, park by park. It is past time to restore the Earth's native plant and animal communities, her clothing of choice, and remind people that our role here on this beautiful home of ours is one of guardian, not gardener. Well, Mary, I'm so excited to have you here with us at Not Work Myth and Storytelling. And as is our way on the podcast, we'll first ask the story to speak for itself, and then we'll explore it together for all of its resonances. So Falcha, would you tell us a story?
Sure. Thank you for asking me. Okay, so this is a little story I wrote called The First Time. "Can you hear us?" the plants asked the small girl. She did not respond, thinking it was her imagination, something she was used to ignoring already. Her imaginary world seemed to have a life of its own, another entity, having a separate experience in this borrowed body of hers. Lying on her belly in the meadow, she was too distracted anyway to listen to the plants looking for her attention. Her plump legs stretched out behind her, shoes kicked off. Her chin rested upon the backs of her crossed arms, pressed into the grass, crushing it against the earth beneath. When she eventually got up, she knew there would be indentations, imprints in her soft, freckled skin. She wondered about how the grasses felt about her lying on top of them, if her arms left indents in them too. Was it painful for them? Familiar to lying stretched out on the land that wanted her back, she felt the undergrowth was warm beneath, and the sun was comforting above. The world she examined in the meadow was a bustling green city, all sorts of versions of herself moving about, living their lives. If she stayed still enough, she wasn't sure. She was sure they wouldn't notice her. She held her breath. A knot of loneliness had always sat heavily inside her, though she did not know yet how to name it. Every thread she cast towards people unraveled before it caught. Instead, she sought out wild creatures who were wary of her. Still, she tried again that day. She reached out towards a bright green spider dangling from a blade of grass, just wanting to say hello, to chat. But the spider scurried, clearly scared, and she pulled her hand back and retreated into herself again. She was used to this feeling, this small sting of rejection. Even though she was small, she had already decided that people were not her kin, not worth her time. Yet those other connections with non-humans she tried to cultivate, they were elusive somehow, leaving a deep cavern inside with each letdown. She ached for the loss of their potential kinship, but thinking back to the workings of the farm she lived on, she could already understand why they were afraid of us. Unwaveringly, the plants kept endeavouring because they still loved her. Once again, they tried to catch her attention. Living in the hedgerows, the ditches and meadows, they loved the girl from afar and wanted to welcome her into their tribe. So they shimmered, waved, spoke to her from inside and giggled until finally the girl relented, looked up and listened. And the plants smiled and began to tell her how it used to be and how, if she listened well, they would share their stories, teach her their language and potions. The girl smiled back, and though she would occasionally forget how to listen throughout her life, she always found her way back, until finally she never left them again. That's it.
Knotwork is a listener-supported show. And if these stories and conversations mean something to you, then becoming a paid subscriber to the Mythworkers Hearth over on Substack is the most direct way to keep the podcast going. As my thank you, paid subscribers receive Tourists, a series of special episodes that go deeper into the mythical, imaginal, and physical landscapes at the heart of this work. It's the journey within the journey. As a paid subscriber, you're also invited to join our monthly hearth gatherings, live storytelling, writing, and conversation with fellow myth-minded companions. You can find the link to subscribe to the Mythworkers Hearth in the show notes or visit us at mythworkers.com. Oh, Mary. Until finally she never left. Oh, my goodness. There's so much here. It's like this, like, well, it's much like what I know of your work, just the beauty of that just emanates from every little corner of language. And this girl in her knot of loneliness, every thread she cast to people unraveled before it caught.
Yeah.
Oh.
I know. I it was a moment in I don't know what age I was exactly, but I was like between 5 and 7, something like that. And, you know, I wandered into this, what's known as a fairy field locally in on the top of my parents' farm. And the gap closed behind me, like, and there was no way out of the field. And it was just, I guess, an illusion, one that, you know, was part of life before we broke our connection to the other realms, you know. And I was stuck in there for the whole day, when and I could not get out, like I couldn't get out. And I eventually just lay down in the meadow and got distracted by the bees and the butterflies and the plants, and that's when I finally learned how to connect with plants, like. And it's not like I'm unique, anybody can do it. It's just acknowledging their energy and their spirit the same way you would with people, do you know?
And hearing the invitation and having the courage to understand that it's for you, because it was that idea you gave us around the sense of, you know, she imprinted the earth and it imprinted and the earth imprinted upon her. And there's that sense of really feeling invited, even in that. Well, as I sit with your story, it's that sense of both otherness and separation and absolute connection and unity in between. And that it is as simple as recognizing that we could be invited to just be here. And remember, we touch the earth and earth touches us, and that's a relationship.
That's it, yeah.
And it's so simple. And it's so, and yet we keep having conversations and writing books about it and forgetting and remembering over and over again.
Yeah. And it's about remembering that in order to be in true relationship, you have to support somebody's or, you know, true nature. And we have trained ourselves to control land and enforce our own visions upon it in our gardens. And therefore, it's very difficult to maintain a real relationship with a piece of land when you don't allow it to be itself.
Right.
And so my work kind of centers around that concept of, you know, if you want to save the planet, then start with your own patch of it, you know. And, you know, as our ancestors always told us, that we are simply reflections of the earth beneath our feet. So we might find it hard to heal ourselves as such, but if we work on healing the land beneath our feet, we come back into true relationship with ourselves. And it's a roundabout way of doing it, but it's a much easier way of doing it. And yeah, it's an interesting process.
And the only way of doing it, right? Because we can, I mean, ultimately, we can try all the other solutions, but at least I know from my own experiences, like I can keep running and running and gain the knowledge and go to the healer and do all the right practices. And then yet, if I forget to look up to the tree canopy or remember what phase of the moon we're in, I'm still always going to be off.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the only way. I mean, that's just my experience and yours. Everybody has different ways. I mean, probably ways of, I mean, look, we used to be natural, and it's very difficult within the system of life that we have to be natural. It's very difficult, so, we can only do our best. And that's all any of us can do. And to try and give ourselves a hard time because we don't live as Indigenous humans live, it's kind of pointless. Like, we just have to do our best within the system that has us enslaved, really, and once you do your best, like, that's good enough. You know, do what you can, like, and not everyone has the physical ability or the financial ability or anything to do what is expected of us in this time. So, everyone's calling is different. It might be to look after one person, or, you just wouldn't know. And so I just want to make sure that people don't feel bad
Thank you.
because they can't connect in the way certain people have. I guess not the entitlement, that's not the right word, but the opportunity to do so. If you live in an apartment block in the middle of a city, like, what are you going to do? It's hard. But yeah, so really, it's just do your best. That's all people can do. And if that means getting a window box and fixing it properly so that it's safe and filling it full of, locally collected native, what people call weeds, and watching and getting to know those little plants from seeds into plants, and getting to know the spiders that might come and live there or the insects that come and visit, and starting to build a relationship with true nature, even in that tiny patch. Like, and it may seem like nothing in the face of what we are looking at, and it's hard to keep, but it's not, like, it's not nothing. Because if we don't take every patch of this planet and take responsibility for it, person by person, patch by patch, we are really screwed. Like, and those patches are going to become the seeds of restoration. They're patches of hope, like, for the land, for the waters, and for ourselves, because nothing else seems to work. And it's the only thing I've seen that actually gives people hope, to see how quickly nature can recover and the energy can come back when we do a little bit of work. But yeah, otherwise people just feel bad and they retreat into themselves and they give up. And we can't have that, like.
Oh, well, Mary, thank you for sort of challenging my, accidental. Oh, well, it's an interesting way. We just used only in so many different ways. It's the only way to do this, but we
Oh,
can only
sorry.
do what
Yeah.
we can do. No, like there's no sorry. Like I think it's so helpful to, we can get all tangled up in language, especially in English, but it's when we can sit with all the different resonances that come between and lovingly sort of shine lights on, like, hey there, sister, you're kind of getting into some perfectionism and saying that's the only way to do it, when actually there's only a million different ways to do it. And held within what you're saying, in that sense of like it's at the level of a window box, and it's a level of the spider in the corner of the room. Like your story itself is giving us a fairy field, which is such a unique place, especially those of us in the States and around the world in colonized land, when we don't have connection in the same way to the original indigenous stories and lore. Like I can speak for myself that my yearning is so often just send me across the Atlantic Ocean to the place of my ancestors and to the place of like the fairy stories that I know are from that land. And if I, it has that constant ache for, oh, in that other place. And we can talk about the other world too, but you're really reminding us of the sense that the earth as we have her is only everywhere. And so rather than say only in this specific sacred circle is it possible, it is possible everywhere. And yet also there are certain parts of the earth where bits of magic seem to be more palpable and radiate through.
All ground is sacred ground. Whether you're on the rubbish heaps of Dublin or, in Newgrange. And that quote that comes, well, it's not a direct quote, but it's from my favorite person that ever lived, apart from my kids, I guess, is an Irish philosopher called John Moriarty. And I just love his energy and his spirit. And he understood this stuff, and he came at it from all these different angles. And I my heart really goes out to people living in places that they don't feel connected to. And I come across it a lot with Americans and Canadians, and these are all stories. And they're all histories, and they're all valid, but we haven't time anymore for that. We have to root into whatever piece of ground you have the availability to root into, and you have to give everything you can to support that land and those waters and those peoples and your community. We have to rebuild our communities from the ground up, and we don't know what they're going to look like because, the system is trying to break everything apart. And oh, I love your glass jar. And we have to we really have to look at what are we going to do? Like, what are we going to do? What can we do? Like everyone I know in the States, like, it's built upon such bloodshed. But like, colonialism has, broken our connection to the natural world in so many ways and so many places. Like, but look, that's happened. Now what do we do now? Like, what do we do now? And if you look at what John says, like, every patch of ground is important. Like, whether you're on the street outside your apartment or you're in somewhere that you don't feel that connection, you have to grow it. Like, you have to build it. Like, it's just hard, like, I know, but we haven't time for people to keep looking beyond. We have to just work with what we have. And like, I live on the land that I was born, but I'm like, literally, I'm an ark in the sea of industrial farms, like, and it's heartbreaking, like, but I have to get on with it. Like, I have to get on with it. I mean, no matter what I do, farmers in massive tractors are going to spray chemicals over the ditches in top of my precious land. I can't do anything about it other than try and grow plants to try and protect the rest of them. I mean, it's so hard, like, but I have to get on with it, and I
Get
have
on
to
with
do
it.
it as much as I can. And I suppose we have to stop l looking at our stories, and we just have to get on with it, like, because we haven't time. We haven't time. The earth is literally calling for us to step up, because if we don't step up, we're like we're tied to her coattails, and if she falls off the cliff, we're
We're gone.
gone. And that's what's happening, like. And we can't fight the system, but we can ignore it and try and step outside of it as much as you can, and build a community that is not looking to be told what to do. Like, we have to start trusting ourselves and trusting our own instincts and getting away from all the bullshit we've been told. Like, we have to, we can. I ramble and talk, so you have to interrupt me.
I'm loving the ride, and I'm excellent at tracking. So I want to loop us back just to remind. So Our listeners probably know John Moriarty's name. I've mentioned him many times. And actually, his niece, Amanda Carmody, was on the show in December and read some of John's Christmas stories. So if listeners want to go back and just be with John from that perspective, but looking him up to be able to, I mean, I think that both Mary, you and I can hear him say, "All land is sacred land," in that tone of his that just has just the resonance of the ancients and of Connemara just coming through. So thank you for, bringing him in. He's always with me in my work as well. Like, yes to the, I mean, obviously the power of stories. They bring us together. We know that in our bones. And also, we don't have time to be so precious about lingering with whether this is mine or all of those like small s stories that hang out inside of us. And it's also just an observation from within my own lifetime of saying, right, so I grew up in the 80s and 90s in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, right? Like we were given the narrative of, say, the Pilgrims and the first Thanksgiving, right? And we literally lived on the lands of the Wampanoag people. And we were given a whitewashed version of these poor people who were religiously persecuted in England, and then they got to come here and start a new world. And so we accepted that, and we mostly dressed up as pilgrims rather than as Indians during the Thanksgiving play the day before everybody went home and ate turkey from, factory farms, et cetera, et cetera. And then the wildness of within one lifetime, understanding the word, not like the colonies were just given to us as this lovely history, but then understanding colonization as a verb that was not simply, and that's our origin story, isn't it lovely? Now everybody, let's eat. And the kind of the what it asks of us within a lifetime to go saying, oh my God, like these were invaders in so many ways, and it then started the history of our people as and our nation as we know it in extermination. Like it's the wild paradox of holding the both things that says we've just figured out these parts that would say, I don't necessarily feel I have a right to this land within a decade of a couple of decades of also saying, but I damn well better figure out how to create deep and lasting relationship because this is the land that we have, and she needs me here right now to fully show up for her and not just, I'll say this, not just soak her with my white tears of saying, look how terrible it is that we're even here. And there's just, and I think that speaks to a lot of the sense of the American and Canadian sense of lack of belonging because we were raised to have it unquestioningly 20, 30, 40 years ago. And then we were said, but wait, do you see how this is working? And also, this is a state of emergency. And how do you tend to what you do have and rather than, yearning back to the ancestral?
Yeah, exactly.
It's wild.
It
It's
is
wild. I
wild.
mean, welcome to being human in the 21st century.
It's so confusing, isn't it? I mean, honestly, it's just that whole, I mean, we're living in really interesting times, but they're horrific. Like what's happening around the world is horrific. And the inability of people to speak out and speak the truth because they're afraid, of what's, what the consequences are for speaking the truth. And, I don't know which way it's going to go, but hopefully we'll have a chance to fix it.
What did you say that it was about? Not, we can't fight the system, but we can live outside the system. How do you look at
Well,
that?
I kind of have this thing about, there's a couple of things. One is that, the really good thing about the misinformation online is that people are going to have to start learning how to trust their instincts again, which, is good because this whole believing what you're told thing has to stop. Like you have to start, finding a moral compass and finding what's real again, because there doesn't seem to be a moral compass left. It's all about belonging to a particular tribe and you believe what they believe and that's it.
And
And
don't forget, it's also about having the most stuff and having
most
the
stuff,
best
yeah,
stuff.
that's really important too. Yeah, so I mean, I do think ignoring something is quite a powerful thing to do in many ways, because I talk about it in one of my books. I can't remember which one, where there was like a king or an emperor. He used to carry out these experiments on babies, and he took a load of babies from their mothers, and I think it was like the 15th century or some bizarre time. And then he was trying to see if they would speak Greek or Roman. So he had women nursing them and feeding them, but nobody was allowed to speak to them, and nobody was allowed to look them in the eye. So of course they all died. And it's just an example of how if you ignore something, it doesn't know it exists and it dies. So I'm kind of thinking maybe we could treat the system like that. If we can ignore the system and, try and build our own systems and our own communities and look around our local areas and find out who's doing all the damage, because all the destruction is local to someone, and all of us have to become strong communities where we stand together and go, that's enough now, no more polluting those rivers, no more tearing down these trees, like stop, this is not the way to deal with addiction. Let's build new systems here locally for this, or let's look after people who are without homes. Let's look out for people. Let's look after people who need extra support. Like, by developing our own systems inside or outside of the system as much as we can, we build a sense of service into our lives and a sense of belonging, which is completely missing, And when you rebuild your communities based on service and belonging, then you start to care about the land you're living with and the chemicals that are on your food. And, you start, everything changes because you have the support to think differently. Because, like, if you were on your own, how are you going to say, okay, how are we going to grow enough food for this community? But if the community is together, you can start to figure that stuff out. And I mean, it's really hard to know how to do that, So, like for myself, I began building community through learning my language again, And so I started what we call a Kirkle Cora in my local town, which is a conversation circle in order to learn Irish again, because we all had to learn Irish, but we were taught it in such an awful way that most people don't really know how to speak it. And so for the past, I guess it's more than a year now, I've been meeting a bunch of women and men every once a week, where we just speak Irish to each other, even though half the time we don't know what we're saying, but somebody will know how to correct it. And then we developed it into a mel. So now we meet each other at each other's houses on the Saturdays, and we give a couple of hours of work towards the person who needs help. And
Oh,
whatever they
man.
need help with, we do it, and we do it in Irish. So we're learning and we're building community together, And it's a simple way of doing it, but
This is where, Mary, I have to tell you. So we put in a garden a couple years ago. It was the hardest thing my husband and I have ever done. We actually named our land the Burren because we live on a piece of granite with an inch or two of soil on top of it. It seems at certain parts. And so we put in our garden, and it was, I mean, we're still married, so obviously we can do anything together. But we named it Ubber because it's the work. And it's just like, I'm going out to Ubber, and and go out and visit it because, and that's the little, so I just, over here, 3,000 miles away, I'm rooting in a little bit of the language and the work of it. I feel like another thread of connection there.
Good. That's great.
But I love how you name the sense of that it is the weaving of cultural remembrance and community and action in this moment in response to what people need. Like, this isn't just about a sort of sacred refusal of, well, I'm not going to go to the garden center anymore. It is definitely some of that, but it's if the garden center is doing, the conventionally grown invasive chemical ridden plants. But it gets to be both that sense of what we resist and then what we build in the spaces that we can carve out, because we make more room for these sort of community reclaimings when we can step away from and ignore other various parts of the overculture. And what seems to be coming through with that, and what I know of your works, so I'll hold up the copy of what is one of the prettiest darn books I've ever seen. I've been like traveling around with it over the last few days and getting ready for this, and I keep like passing it to friends. I'm like, I get to talk to this woman, and she made the most beautiful book. And they're like, oh, and everyone just needs to touch it. But this sense of beauty that is so imbued in what you do and what you offer, it's staggering in its own way, and it seems to have its own radical and yet deeply natural inclination, I would assume, within you to make things around you beautiful. It's part of, I just would love to talk about that and how that works in your story.
Yeah, I don't see it that way. I mean, well, I suppose I don't really know, like, I mean, because I don't really understand things like houses. You know, but I do, I try really hard to find my own spirit within my work. Like, and I know if I'm writing someone else's words, or I know if I'm drawing something that isn't like, I if it doesn't contain the energy I'm looking for, it's obvious and it's lazy and I get annoyed with myself. Like, so I can't get away with it, like, because I'm tough on myself, you know? So I sell these stories, and I've just written four more in the last few weeks, and I'm just drawing them up now. And they're kind of land prayers for people to tell stories to their land, you know. Will I read you one?
Yes,
Okay, let me
please.
find one here. Hang on now. And it's just, I mean, it's just hard for me to kind of be like, kind of. It's hard for me to be true to myself because it's very revealing, you know. Okay, this is one, and I'll say it anyway. But it's called An Oath of Entwinement. It's very short. And these are things for people to say to their own land, like, you know, and they don't have to buy them off me. They can just listen to them and write them down. Or they can make up their own one, which is even better. So I'm becoming this land. Her body is mine. My heart grows strong. Our roots entwine. Here, Mother Earth, I fix all that is wrong. I break your chains and free your song. Between these realms, I'm a bridge of breath. I welcome the circle of life and of death. In between, I take her hand. I dance, I plant, I grow, I land. I am the needle, the plants are the thread. I reweave her beauty, I learn, and I shed. I'm the catcher of sunlight, the drinker of rain. I watch her wisdom, I feel her pain. A portal between the other world and here, I listen, I bless, I plant, I steer. For all that we did, the distance we tore, I pledge to remember, to love, to restore. I breathe with her slowly, I remake our bed. This land is my love, and to her I am wed. And you see, I used to think that they were really silly because, you know, I've it's taken me 52 years to learn how to be myself. And I've realized now that, you know, I don't have to write poems the way other people do, or I don't have to draw stuff the way other people do. I have to do what's true to me. And some people learn that early on. And, you know, a lot of the time people go to art college or they do whatever their, you know, education pulls them in a certain way, and they're channeled to act or draw or create in the way of their teachers. And it can take a long time to find their true spirit after that kind of learning. And I was really hard on myself my whole life, really, until I realized I can't do it very well unless I do what's good for me and what's right for me. And if other people don't like it, that's okay. But it's me, like, and finding that real energy of who I am and putting it into my work. You know, that takes effort. You know, it takes effort to be yourself, like, especially after growing up in the system that we have, you know. So
Oh, Mary, thank you for giving us the portal to the fairies and to lay us down upon the bed of the earth and to call this into such deep, beautiful personal space that just opens us up to be part of the everything. Thank you. I'm
You're
so
so
grateful.
welcome. But thanks for wanting to chat to me. I appreciate
Absolutely. So I'll
it.
include links to your website so that people can find these gorgeous prayers. I am envisioning one beside my door and want to know that I can weave this magic into my life for the long run. And also to your work with We Are the Ark. We've just only barely kissed upon that, but I'm gonna hold up a copy of one of the most beautiful books in my collection. And maybe it will find its way to our listeners because it just opens so many doors and roots us in. So thank you.
You're
Para
so
mil
welcome.
maigas.
Thanks for the chat. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to Knot Work, Myth, and Storytelling. Please subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast platform, and do share this episode with other lovers of mythology and story. Want more knotwork in your life? Please consider becoming a paid subscriber to my newsletter, The Mythworker's Hearth, over on Substack. As a paid subscriber, you'll have access to the special new podcast series called Touros, which takes you even deeper into mythology, landscape, and the creative journey. And yes, that's a new name. You may know my newsletter as Myth is Medicine. It's now The Mythworker's Hearth. Creating this show is a labor of love, and your support will help me continue to craft and share stories throughout this season and beyond. You can find out more about my writing, my book, The Sovereignty Knot, A Woman's Way to Freedom, Power, Love, and Magic, our online writing communities, including the Author's Knot, as well as how to work with me as a writing coach over at my website, marisagowdy.com. Music on the show is by Beth Sweeney and Billy Hardy, a Celtic fiddle and multi-instrumental duo based on Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Find out about their music and shows at billyandbeth.com. My own work is inspired and sourced through a connection to my Irish ancestors. Gratefully, I live, write, work, and record this podcast on the ancestral lands of the Lenape, whose name means original people.